everybody. This is Alex once again for another fun, educational, and as I mentioned, fun-filled episode of the EOT Newsflash. As always, I am joined with one lovely guest host, directly beneath me for watching on YouTube, Mr. Justin, who is beardless. How's it going, man?
Well, I do miss the beard. Unfortunate shaving accidents. Mm. But it's growing back.
His girlfriend made him shave it off.
No, she's actually super pissed.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I mean, the heart wants what the heart wants. And, you know, anyway.
She wants my beard.
Right. Anyway, this is going to get graphic. Anyway, so we took last week off. They're just, you know, scheduling is what it is. I was dead tired from work, other things going on. So we are back this week with episode 64, Count the Shadows. Shout out all the Doctor Who fans out there. It's a Death Shadows reference. Come on.
Fair enough.
Okay. I was writing this stuff at work today, and it is what it is. All right, so
we should have reviewed this.
Probably so, but this is not a democracy. This is, you know, a dictatorship. This is my show. So anyway, we've got some cool stuff to talk about this week. We've got a ton of events to go over. We had double Modern GP weekend. We had our first team event at the SCG Open, which played three formats: Modern, Legacy, and Standard. Super cool. We also have the reveal of the Modern Masters 2017 packaging, which is could not have come any sooner because the set literally comes out next month. And then we also have the Amonkhet packaging that's been revealed. It looks super sweet and smart from that. So we're going to talk about all that and more. But really quick, before we dig into any of that, Justin, did you see the 150-card deck that won? I believe it was either a PPTQ or an RPTQ.
What? So I did not hear about this.
So this was floating around on Reddit. So this guy shows up to either a modern PPTQ or an RPTQ. I can't remember what it was. Playing 150 card Bring to Light Scapeshift.
What?
Had the Scapeshift package. Had Unburial Rites, Ilesh Norn, Gifts Ungiven package in it. Glittering Wish. Like, this guy went so freaking deep in the tank. I was absolutely blown away. So my question to begin the show tonight, Justin, is how many cards is too many for you when you're playing Magic?
62 is too many for me.
62. So 61's fine?
Yes. Okay, I'm all about the spicy 61. I try and keep it to 60, but
sometimes one creeps in.
Yeah, sometimes one creeps in, and that's fine. We're not messing with probability that much,
right?
But oh my god, 150. I mean, like, sure, no one's gonna be able to sideboard against you properly, but
that's true, and
you're not gonna lose to mill unless it's some shenanigans that mills you for 300 cards all at once. But
right. Well, we know that you play modern allies that can do that. So
yeah, but like anyone who plays like an actual mill deck is not going to kill you that way. And you know, it's like, oh, I brought in Hate for Scapeshift. Oh, well, they just Gifts Ungiven'd me. Okay.
I think it was playing Gifts. I'm gonna double check that really quick. Yes, it was playing Gifts. Yeah.
I assumed they were when you said Ilesh Norn and Unburial Rites.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, sure. But who's to say you ever draw the things that you need?
Oh, that's the whole point. Because here's the hot tech, right? So you know what Splendid Reclamation does?
Is that the thing that brings all your lands back from the grave?
Oh, yeah. Do you know what Traumatize does?
I have never heard of Traumatize.
Traumatize is a 5-mana sorcery that says target player puts the top half of his or her library rounded down into his or her graveyard. And then you spend a reclamation and kill them with Valakut triggers.
I mean, like, I guess, but I mean, you have to survive long enough. I mean, like, this guy did it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, this
I mean,
guy
it happened.
I'm trying to find the information on it. So this was at a modern tournament in Finland, of all places, because Finland is awesome. He was so. Here are just, you know, some highlight cards. Madcap Experiment and Platinum Empyrean. You know, that ridiculous combo that people came up with after Kaladesh was revealed? Super sweet. He's playing four of every legal fetch line in Modern. Let's see what else we got in here. Elish Norn, Platinum Empyrean, Renegade Rallier, the breakout card from Aether Revolt with that sweet, you know, return mechanic. This deck is sick. And of course, four Glittering Wish because you got to go and get your own sideboard hate out of your sideboard because you only have 15 cards. Anyway.
Speaking of Aether Revolt and breakout cards, Little Zoo has seen some interesting twists.
Yes.
With the Nadim Renegade, Green Wheel Liberator, and Hidden Herbalist. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, but it gives you another effect that is similar to Burning Tree Shaman to just kind of go nuts. And I think, I forget who posted it online, but I saw a picture of this depicting a turn two kill off of a turn one goblin guide, and then it was fetch land crack to go and play the two man, the
Hidden
green
Herbalist.
Yeah.
Hidden Herbalist.
Into, I think, like
Green Wheel Liberator.
Yeah.
A Manamorphos and a
Bushwhacker. Yeah.
Yes.
Killed. Dead. So that's awesome.
No, it was a Wild Nacatl, not a
Was it Wild Nacatl?
Wild Nacatl, not Green Wheel Liberator.
Yeah, whatever it was. Deck is sweet. But you know what else is sweet? Triple format tournaments. So over in Baltimore over the weekend, the SCG Open hit the road over there, and this was the first time that they have showcased this triple format Open. It was basically their excuse to put Legacy back in the spotlight, so good for them, I guess. So basically, as it is, you know, you have a team of three. So let's say, like, Justin and I, myself, and, you know, our buddy, Mr. X, got together and formed a team. I'm playing Legacy, Justin's playing Modern, and our buddy's playing Standard. So it's a really cool, very sort of complex format because you have to kind of know every format so you can help the rest of your team out, you know. I am by no means a Legacy expert, so I don't know how versed in Legacy you are, Justin, but if we were to sit down and someone goes like, all right, turn one, City of Traders, Chalice for one, would we know what we're up against in some cases?
I don't think I would know. I mean, like, maybe Eldrazi?
The answer is Eldrazi, yes.
Okay.
So, just to kind of break down, we're not going to dig into the decks a whole lot because they're kind of like, you know, the regular, you know, the usual suspects that were that kind of did well. In first place, we had the team of Sam Pardee, Benjamin Stark, and Matt Ness, all Magic pros. Sam Pardee playing Soul Tide Control Legacy, Ben was playing Black Green Delirium in Standard, and Matt Ness was playing Death's Shadow in Modern, and that's a deck that we're going to talk about here just a little bit because Death's Shadow had a hell of a weekend. The deck that you thought was gone, you better count your shadows, because it isn't going anywhere, I don't think. Second place, we had the team of Levi Popshikal, Paul Lynch, and Asa Snyder playing Mardu Vehicles, Miracles, and Grixis Control, respectively. My man. And I don't know if this was it was a girl or a guy. I didn't catch them on camera, so I'm just going to assume, you know, whatever their gender was, it doesn't matter. This deck is super hot. Playing Liliana, the Last Hope, in a modern Grixis deck, I'm all about that. And playing Bedlam Revelor 2, super hot.
Well, I don't know about Grixis, but I know in Abzan, Last Hope has actually been doing very well in conjunction with Grim Flare.
Yes. Yeah, I'm playing one Last Hope in my Jund decks right now just because the ability to recur the big threats in that deck, like Tarmogoyf, and, you know, Dark Confidant late game is absolutely amazing. Like, Liliana, the Last Hope is, she's no, what's the other one called?
Chain Veil?
Of the Veil. You know, she's no Veil, Liliana, but she's pretty darn close in terms of just her ability to, you know, just kind of warp games around herself. So,
I mean, I think their power level is very similar. They just do different things.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true.
I mean, being able to take, you know, let's say your opponent has Kalatus on the field. It's a real freaking hard card to beat.
Yeah.
You know, plus one bolt. You know, it's like putting things in bolt range is like worth mentioning. And then like the Delver decks and there's so many other decks run X1s.
Yeah. And, like, the format is an X1 format for the most part.
Yeah, so being able to just, like, machine gun down threats very threat-light decks is worth mentioning. And then when they do finally kill your Tarmogoyf, cool, let me just mill over a couple cards and grab it back.
Yeah, or make a bunch of zombies. You know, it's whatever. Whatever you want to do.
So, yeah. I think you're right. Vale is more powerful overall.
Yeah.
But I think that people don't give Last Hope enough credit.
Yeah.
Because she's not that far behind.
Yeah. Like, Vale is one of the few planeswalkers in the modern format, like Nahiri is, that warps the game around her completely. I don't know if Last Hope commands the same respect, but I do agree that it is insanely powerful in the right deck. So, without a doubt. Alright, back to the Baltimore Open. In third place, we had Michael Mapson, Billy Mitchell, and Ian Flynn in third place, and they're playing Nia Company, Grixis Delver, and Four Color Saheeli, respectively. Fourth place, we had Ryan Dunn, who I believe was on Jackass. Maybe not the same person. I don't know. Nicholas D'Ambros and Eric English playing Affinity, Mardu Vehicles, and Food Chain. Justin, do you know what Food Chain is?
Yes and no. I know it's some sort of ridiculous, like, near infinite combo thing.
Oh, it's not near infinite. It is infinite.
Where you ramp up in mana by sacking creatures, but then you bring creature back from exile because you play the right creatures.
So,
which was originally... Okay, this is the Legacy deck.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So... Okay, yeah. For some reason, I was thinking this was, like, the modern deck, and I was like...
No. Oh, no, no. Food Chain is not legal in modern, by no means. So, Food Chain...
It should be.
Oh, no. God, no. Because most of these cards are... Well, I say most, and it's like we're talking, like, you know, the creatures at least. Except for Baleful Strix and Death Arch Shaman, most of the deck. Anyway, so Food Chain is a 2 and a green enchantment that reads, remove a creature you control from the game. Add X mana of any color to your mana pool, where X is the removed creature's converted mana cost... +1. That's important. This creature may be... This mana may be spent to only cast creature spells. So, do you know what Mist Hollow Griffin is, Justin?
Yeah, it's the better version of Eternal Scourge.
Yes.
You can cast it from exile, and it costs 4 mana. It was from Innistrad, I believe?
Avacyn Restored, essentially. Yeah, or Avacyn... Avacyn Restored, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so the idea is that you cast Food Chain, and then you cast Mist Hollow Griffin, and then you start figuring out how to effectively, you know, just get rid of it, and you just constantly loop casting it until you generate 15 mana and hardcast Emrakul.
Okay.
Seems good, right?
Yeah. I'm actually looking at the list now, and I'm noticing that it plays Leovold, Emissary of Trest.
Oh, because Leovold's the nuts.
Oh my god, it's in every Legacy deck right now.
It's in every Vintage deck right now.
It's ridiculous.
This card is stupidly good. So this is the card from Conspiracy 2, Take the Crown. It is a Sultai-colored, black-green-blue Elf Advisor. It's legendary. It's a 3/3 that reads, each opponent can't draw more than one card each turn, and whenever you or an opponent you control becomes a target of a spell or ability your opponent controls, you draw a card.
You draw all of the cards.
You
your opponent plays none.
You draw cards with this deck. Like, there's a reason that Sultai Control is now one of the best decks in Legacy, and it's all on Leovold's shoulders. So, I'm all about that.
Yeah. I'm seeing deck splash, like, green or black.
Oh, yeah.
Or blue. Like, just, you know, whatever the missing color is, they splash it. They're now a 4-color deck, and the only off-color card is Leovold.
Yeah. Well, the key in those is, so, like, there were a bunch of Grixis decks floating around, like Grixis Delver decks in Legacy for a while, that were effectively 4 colors because of Deathrite Shaman. They can now just play Leovold for absolutely no, you know, real payment other than just a land, which is... And so it's a card just absolutely nuts. And I just like that Wizards is allowing decks to be, or cards like that, like Leovold, to be played in decks, you know, even though they're the older decks, but to keep printing cards that impact older formats is still very, very cool. I just hope that, you know, they continue that trend at some point. So,
Walking Ballista.
I got my set in earlier this week. I'm super excited to play the Eldrazi Tron. I'm so excited. Anyway. So, fifth place, we have the team of Shaheen Serrani, Dan Musser, and Daryl Ayers playing Esper Control, in Standard, no less. Very sweet deck. Scapeshift in the hands of Dan Musser, and Lands by Daryl Ayers. Sixth place was a team of Joshua Taylor, Michael Durzko, and Ted Felicity, playing Colas Eldrazi, Abzan, and Four Color Saheeli. Seventh place, Arya Ruhi, Dylan Donegan, Corey McDuffie, playing Burn, Sultai Delver, and Four Color Saheeli. And eighth place, Patrick Sullivan, Chad Kestel, Rob Vaughn, playing Burn, Abzan, and Four Color Marvel. I don't know about you, Justin, but I would love to play in a team event like this because this seems absolutely awesome. I have friends who play Legacy, and I think I have a few.
I have mixed feelings on it because I like the aspect of Team Unified where you're having to, you know, strategically split up cards. This is pretty cool being able to... you know, be able to, like, play with a team of being like, yeah, I've got my friend who only plays Legacy, and I've got this friend who only plays Standard. Well, I love playing Modern.
Yeah.
You know, we can team up. So, that was pretty neat. I also am always a huge fan of them, providing Legacy tournaments, because when there is coverage on Legacy games, it is... Well, it's kind of funny because it's either like super interesting or it's over super fast.
That is very true.
But when you have those super interesting games where someone doesn't win on turn one or two, it's really exciting. I mean, it's like watching for those that are interested in watching sports. it's like Legacy is like the NFL or whatever. And then, like, Modern is your college-level sports. And then your Standard is, like, watching a high school game.
I would argue that some college sports are better than the pro-level sports. The NCAA basketball, for instance, infinitely better than the NBA. I'm just going to go out there and say that.
Well, with NBA, we'll flip it. But the point is, like...
I didn't say college football is more entertaining to watch than actual professional NFL football.
I don't watch sports. Yeah, I don't know.
I watched just enough to make this comparison because my grandmother loves the NCAA, and she agrees that the NCAA, like, watching collegiate sports is infinitely more entertaining than watching pro-level sports because those boys are out there busting their asses, are trying so much harder than these guys getting paid umpteen $1 million for throwing a freaking ball around. And I'm gonna stop right there.
Okay.
Let's talk about Magic.
the point is that, like, when you watch a professional player play with, like, you know, a Legacy deck, I mean, you're watching them do the most powerful things possible in the game.
Yes.
And, like, that's really exciting. Whereas, like, watching them cut at the hamstring because they're playing, you know, freaking four copies of Evolving Wilds in their deck. Just like,
I see what you're saying though. It's like putting, I wouldn't call it training wheels because there are definitely some very, you know, complex elements of Standard right now. You know, your own opinion differing, of course, you know, who you are.
No, I think Standard is a very excellent format right now.
Yeah.
But like, it's just that
there's
not
a complexity element. Yeah. And there, so I don't know how much you actually watched of the events this weekend. So we had this triple event, or this triple format event going on in Baltimore, and we had the GPs going on in Brisbane and Vancouver. Any time that the SCG Open switched their coverage to a Standard game as opposed to Modern or Legacy, the numbers dropped on their event and shot up on the actual Wizard events at the GPs. I was beside myself. I was watching it. And someone was keeping track of it on Reddit and just watching those numbers just jump up and down because every time it happened like clockwork, nobody gives a damn about Standard, at least to watch it. I don't know. But yeah, I think this is a really cool idea. I know that the Starship Games has been phasing out Legacy, but if they keep doing this kind of event, I think they're gonna see that Legacy still has a lot of draw. Especially if they're keeping track of their numbers being viewed on Twitch. So
yeah.
I think this might be their way of seeing just how much interest is still in Legacy and if we can actually bring Legacy back. So we'll see. I don't know. But I'm all for this. But let's switch gears here a little bit to GP Brisbane, all the way on the other side of the world, down in Australia, mates. And that was really bad.
That was really bad.
I don't need your criticism right now. Fragile. So, When we last left Modern, people were like, what's going to happen in Modern? We had just recently had Golgari Grave Troll banned and Gitaxian Probe banned, which kind of made everybody think, well, there goes Dredge, there goes Death Shadow, there goes Infect. And people were mostly right. So the top eight of Brisbane paints a slightly different story in terms of what's still on top. In first place, Mr. Oliver Oakes, OKS, playing everybody's favorite deck, Lantern Control. I wish Sean was here to talk about this right now because he loves this deck. If you don't know, and you've played against Lantern Control right before, right, Justin?
Yeah.
Okay, so for everybody not watching on the YouTube, if you're watching on YouTube, by the way, thank you. Can you explain your reaction to Lantern Control and why you react in such a visceral way?
So the reason why I just pretended to blow my head off,
which you don't condone.
Which you don't yes, condone. Don't do it if you're having suicidal thoughts. Call the suicide hotline.
Call us. We'll talk. We'll talk, Matt.
Call Alex. He'll talk. Anyways, Lantern Control is one of these decks where it's just aggravating to play against because you don't get to play Magic. They do.
Well, nobody's actually playing Magic. They're just playing no Magic better than you're playing no Magic.
Okay. They get to do things. You get to draw lands. or, you know, whatever card is completely ineffectual that they decide that you get to draw.
Usually spot removal.
It's like, here's your path to exile. Thanks, Lantern what Control player.
Yeah. So... Yeah.
But yeah, it's just so frustrating to play against.
Yeah, so if you've ever seen this deck actually in operation, it mm-hmm. runs a couple of cards that you might have just glanced over in your Innistrad and RTR block drafts. Specifically, Lantern of Insight, Ghoul Caller's Bell, and Codex Shredder, which are all one-drop artifacts that allow you to mill cards off the top of any player's library. Lantern of Insight allows you to see the top cards of both players' libraries simultaneously, so you can dictate what is being drawn. And it's also playing Pithing Needles to shut down fetch lands and things like that. It's also playing Ensnaring Bridges to make sure that nobody can attack because it never has any cards in its hand. And it is just a pile of bulk commons mm-hmm. and uncommons and some Mox Opals. It's super annoying to play against. So, I feel you, Justin. I mirror your thoughts about this deck. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you guys, Zach Elsick of the DFW area, he brought this deck to kind of the forefront by winning GP Oklahoma City with it. And it's kind of put up some pretty good finishes overall over the past couple of months. And this is just another one, so... Good job, winning with cards.
Yeah.
This deck has no creatures.
No, it is a build deck, though, so you think I would like it, but no.
You would think, well, it's more of a stranglehold deck, because I've never actually played where I've lost to milling. I just say, you know what, game two. Mm-hmm. Or they can't find their Ensnaring Bridges and can't win that way, so that's fine as well. But anyway, so... In second and third place, we had Dredge. What? What? Am I missing something here?
Yeah, I mean, like, the deck's not dead. It's no. definitely been slowed down. I think what happened here was everyone assumed it was dead. No one... and I haven't really looked at sideboards, admittedly, a whole lot. But my... assumption, more or less, is that outside of this Lantern Control player that played, you know, two Grafdigger's Cages, which, yeah. I mean, that's really not a lot compared to what was, you know, 4 months ago.
Yeah.
So I think that just really helped them. Just there wasn't that much graveyard hate. I'm looking now, and Abzan was running... one Nile spell bomb and two surgical extractions.
Yeah.
Let's hear what Affinity was running.
Relic?
One piece, yeah, one relic.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, we're just seeing this trend over and over again. No one, like, I mean, I would never cut my graveyard hate to less than two personally.
Oh yeah, definitely not.
And it looks like that's what everyone did, was like they had, except for the person who won.
Yeah.
There was one there was like one piece of graveyard hate in their deck of their 75.
Yeah.
So yeah, and that's when Dredge is good. I mean, like, that would be like going to a tournament without any you know, artifact hate. If everyone showed up with no artifact hate, your top eight would be Affinity, 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 Affinity. Dredge is still good enough that if you don't bring any hate, it's gonna win.
Yeah.
It's just not good enough anymore that graveyard hate doesn't matter past turn two.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. You know, it's a lot like the old adage in Vintage: if you don't bring graveyard hate, then Dredge will kill you on turn zero, which is what happens sometimes. But yeah, so we lost Golgari Grave Troll, but we had it replaced by Golgari Thug and Life in the Loam to an extent. So we have a couple extra dredgers now to kind of give the deck a little bit more consistency without that massive Dredge 6. So I don't actually mind seeing it, top 8 of GP like this. It doesn't bother me because it just shows that the pilots are still there that are doing the reps with the deck and proving that it can still be played. You know, we were seeing Infect pop up every now and then. But I think Dredge is one of those decks that just keeps dredging itself back up and refuses to go away. You see what I did there.
That one was better. That would have been a better title.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Third place, Dredge again. Fourth place, Living End. Fifth place, Abzan. Sixth place, Affinity. Seventh place, Black-Green Tron. I like Black-Green Tron better than I like Red-Green Tron or Green-White Tron. Mm-hmm. And in eighth place, we had Nahiri Control, which is actually a little bit of a misleading title because it's not actually Jeskai, like some people might assume. It is actually a Red-White Prison variant of the deck that plays like Blood Moons and Chalice of the Voids. It is a hateful deck.
This is Sun and Moon. This is all this is.
Yeah, it's the Sun and Moon deck. So if you're not familiar with that, it's basically playing Blood Moon, and the Sun aspect of it comes from the fact that it was used to be playing Elspeth Sun's Champion in the main board, which has been regulated to the sideboard in this one, but it is still very much a red-white prison-esque kind of deck. I think it's kind of cool, actually.
No, it's a cool deck, but I mean, I wish they had labeled it properly. This is still Sun and Moon. 100% of Sun and Moon players have moved Elsa of Sun's Champion to the side in favor of Nahiri Emrakul.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, other than, like, my minor pet peeve because they named the deck wrong, you know, it's like... But MTG Top 8 does that a lot.
Whatever. As long as you know what you're looking at, it's fine.
Yeah. It's annoying when you're looking for certain things, like, for example... When I'm looking up Bant Eldrazi, sometimes I have to look through Eldrazi aggro, Bant Eldrazi, and, you know, 100 other...
variants of the same thing, just different names, yeah.
And then, like, some of those Eldrazi aggro lists are the Eldrazi Tron list, and some of them are Bant Eldrazi, and just like, damn it, MTG Top 8? What consistency!
What I'm hearing is a lot of first world problems coming from you, Justin, and I don't think the community largely cares.
You know what? I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being so entitled that I'm annoyed by these things.
Check your privilege, man. Check your
hashtag
privilege.
Hashtag blessed.
All right. Beyond the top eight, we had the rest of the top 16. We had Abzan, Bant Company, Bant Eldrazi, Eldrazi Trons, Juns, Lantern Controls, and Titan Shifts. From this snapshot, I would say that Modern is very healthy.
Yes.
And we turn our eyes now to GP Vancouver, here stateside, but, you know, more northernly. In first place, actually taking up three of the top eight spots, we have Death's Shadow. Hence, you know, count the shadows here. So Death's Shadow was a deck that people thought was gone because it relied kind of heavily on Gataxian Probe to fill up its graveyard quickly and kill your opponent with a massive Death's Shadow, which is a one-drop black creature that is a 13-13, but it gets minus X, where X is your life total. So you can't play it before, like, turn three in some cases in Modern because your life total will just be too high and it just dies automatically. So this deck is still around. We're seeing it, you know, three top eights. Josh Hutter-Layton, Jerry Thompson, and Sam Black, all Magic pros, all top eight of this GP with it. It showed up over at the Baltimore Open as well. And it's just kind of turned into this more mid-rangey, almost, it's very much like a Jund deck. You know, it's playing Charmer Glutz, it's playing Liliana of the Veil, Thought Seizes, and Inquisitions to tear your hand apart and then play this Death Shadow you can't interact with anymore and kill you. So
honestly, like, something I was actually going to point out is I think that Death Shadow, and this might be a little controversial,
oh boy,
I think it's the new Jund. I mean,
Jund,
like,
is the new Jund.
I mean, just like this deck plays more like a mid-range deck than it does a combo deck like it previously
that.
Did.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All three copies run zero copies of Become Immense.
Yep.
Some of them run copies of Timur Battle Rage. Maybe they all three do, but no one runs more than two.
One or two, yeah. I'm looking.
Yeah, so two, yeah. One, two. So, I mean, they're not looking to combo you out. They're looking to grind you out. And then, like, once the game has gone on long enough, they do a million damage to themselves, drop the, you know, and drop their huge threat.
Yeah. Which I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's definitely strong. But, I mean, this deck plays a lot like Jund does. And this, I mean, honestly, this deck might do more powerful things than Jund does.
That's a fair argument, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, maybe it doesn't grind as well as Jund. I haven't seen... I've looked at the list. I've read about the list. I've seen a little bit of play, but not enough to really make like solid judgments on which deck can grind better.
Sure.
But this deck seems to be doing everything that Jund wants to do, while at the same time being able to close out the game with like this huge finisher that Jund doesn't have. Like, Tarmogoyf's finished the game fast, but you know, a 13-13 finishes the game a lot faster.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the addition of Transverse the Uvenwald and being able to take advantage of that and, like, Mishra's Bauble to really feel the Delirium aspect of this deck actually gives it a real consistent ability to win, despite it actually only plays eight creatures. So even though these decks are all playing, you know, Street Race and Gold Clan Rampagers, those Street Race are in there just for purely for cycling, to draw cards and lose life. Gold Clan Rampage are simply in there for the combo kill. So Tarmogoyf and Death Shadow are the only actual creatures in this deck. So I think that just kind of gives a lot of support to playing Transverse the Uvenwald. Like, I even almost like it in regular Jund decks. Just to pull out, you know, one more threat. If you have like a one of like Huntmaster or Kalidus you can play in your deck to go and get that with plus a land or something like that. I think it's a really powerful card, and I like seeing this deck doing well. Again, it's like those Dredge Pilots who lost a major component to the deck but kept doing well, and I think this is great to see this.
Well, I mean this deck is completely different. I don't think this is they kept doing well. This is they took a step back. They looked at what needed to happen, what needed to change, and they evolved. Dredge was simply like the whole, like, you know, persisting on. And then, like I said, no one bringing graveyard hate because everyone was on drugs or something. I'm not really sure. But when I see, like, the most copies of graveyard hate in a deck being two, it's like, and it was only the first place winner. It's like, yeah, well, that's why.
Yeah.
That's
definitely fair. So, yeah, I could see that. So, other than Death Shadow, we had Merfolk in second place. Merfolk's always cool to see pop up. Ebbs and Company in fifth. Sixth place was Affinity. Seventh place was Burn. Eighth place was Vilas Taxes, and then the rest of the top 16, we had 8-Rack, Abzan, Amulet Titan, Bane's Eldrazi, more Death Shadow, more Dredge, more Eldrazi Tron, my heart, and Naya Burn. So, give Modern a grade here, Justin. Give it a letter grade. How great is Modern right now, in your opinion? Give me a grade and like a one sentence blurb about Modern right now.
I'm going to give it an A-. It's doing very well. It's doing pretty diverse. However, there are some minor instances where we're seeing the degenerate decks still kind of dominate things. I would like to see a fair deck show up. I mean, out of all the decks that we talked about, I think in the top 16 of one of the tournaments, there was one Jund player. There was... I don't think I heard any copies in the top 8 of Bant Eldrazi, which is the other fair deck.
Yeah.
So it would be nice to see some of the more fair decks having done some placement. I think that overall we're in a pretty good place. I think we're seeing some really cool decks showing up, but like I said, it would be nice to see something, you know, just a little bit more.
Is Merfolk not fair for you?
It's just an aggro deck. I mean, don't get me wrong. Fair. I love playing aggro decks, but for the sake of everyone, I would love to see a Jund or a Eldrazi, you know, Bant Eldrazi, or one of the... I guess there was the Abzan list.
Yeah.
There was one Abzan player. So, yeah. So one made the top 8 this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely with you. I would give it, you know, probably somewhere in the A range or B plus, really strong B plus right now. I like the fact that the combo-ish decks, you know, for the first couple of weeks, we saw a lot of Goryeo's Vengeance pop up. I don't know if that's just a metagame thing, you know, wherever you're playing, it's kind of, you know, less, you know, popular. But I definitely think that Modern is in the best place that it's been in a very long time. You know, post-bannings, post-Eldrazi winner, post-Splinter Twin. Ugh, it hurts to say that. But just in terms of the things that you can show up with a deck of choice, and as long as you've gotten your reps in and you know what you're doing against the metagame, I think you stand a very good chance to always do well in a Modern tournament.
Mm-hmm.
There is, I would say that nothing is off the table in terms of being able to win. So I think that is a great, great place for Modern to be in right now. Awesome.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. Now, Justin, what makes Modern even better?
I feel like there's a pun here.
There's no pun. But if you're watching this on the YouTubes, boom! Modern Masters 2017 packaging has been revealed! Hallelujah! It's about damn time, too, because the set comes out next month. Literally less than a month. And we're just now seeing the boxes up for this. So
we still have not seen a single card spoiled.
We've seen 3 cards. Almost 4. But we've seen definitely 3 cards spoiled. So, on your screen, if you're watching on the YouTube, and again, if you're watching on YouTube, thank you. I've got the wrappers for the Modern Masters 2017 packaging. And from left to right, we have Domri Rod, Grizzlebrand, sweet, and not Elspeth.
It's Stoic Angel,
bro. Stoic Angel.
It blows my mind how many people like saw this card and like, Elsif! And it's like...
Well, I saw it and I thought, oh, cool, they're printing Elspeth in this set? Sweet. I mean, obviously it's too soon for Elspeth in a Modern Master set. But since Elspeth makes things fly with her ultimate, her most recent Elspeth, I thought, sweet, they're going to make flying Elspeth. It makes total sense. Maybe she's an angel. But it's Stoic Angel. So that's, you know, my bad there. But whatever. Also, and I'm going to scroll down a little bit and we can kind of come back to this. So here is the actual box for Modern Masters 2017. So we see the packs in the box, and we see the box itself has a very mysterious, magical figure with, like, some lightning in his hand. Justin, who do you think this is?
I think that's a Snapcaster Mage there.
I think that's a Snapcaster Mage. I think you're absolutely right.
I mean, we've got the Innistrad-esque armor. He's like, just a hint of Asian, like the original art.
Well, the original guy was.
The original was like super Asian.
Tiago Shawn is of Asian descent.
yes, and he's, you know, the guy on the card, so it would make sense that if they were going to do new art, you know, they would pay a little bit of homage to that.
Really, even after like the Dark Confidant debacle and the Metal Mage debacle, like, you think they would actually go that route?
I don't know. Yeah,
I would
but...
hope they would, because my God, you win a freaking tournament, that you win the Magic Invitational, whatever they called it, and you got your likeness on a card. I better be on that card until the end of time. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
God.
I guess I can see that.
Yeah, anyway.
But anyways, like, regardless, the guy looks like, you know, if Snapcaster Mage had been drawn without having to make it look exactly like a particular player.
Sure. So this looks like what you might think a Snapcaster Mage looks like, except that he's lacking his big arm cannon thing.
Yes.
Which is kind of a bummer, because the arm cannon thing is super sweet.
Of course, we could be completely wrong on this, but...
Yeah, this could be like Cunning Spark Mage. That would be really dumb.
No, it has to be a blue card. There is too much blue in that art for it to be any other color.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of... Ah, shoot. I forget which card I'm thinking of, but it was very obviously red in the art and turned out to be a blue card. I think it was like from a FTV set, I think.
I'd have to see the card.
Yeah, I think it was the art for like Impulse or something like that, that people were really confused about trying to figure out what it actually was, and it turned out to be Impulse, and nobody actually guessed Impulse, but anyway. So yeah, this is really, really cool. This is really, really exciting. Obviously, you know, it's a 24-pack box, which, you know, whatever. It's going to MSRP for $180. It's going to be super expensive, but if they put enough quality cards in it, that justifies the price tag. I would like to mention something, though, about that packaging, though. Justin, did you get to draft any of Modern Masters 2015?
That's the newer one. Yeah, that was the newer one.
The newest one, yeah.
I've drafted it once.
Do you remember what that packaging was made out of?
It was made out of the boxes, which...
Yes.
I liked. I had no problem opening those things. Apparently, everyone else did.
Right. So, the issue was is that you could... And it was proven online. I saw plenty of videos about this. That you could actually break the seal on the pack, open it from the bottom, flip the cards out, and refill it, and then reseal it with, like, some glue. And basically, it was like a... you have, like, a little pull tab on there. And it was supposed to be biodegradable, very, you know, eco-friendly and whatnot. But the problem was that it was damaging cards, and it was possible to actually, like I said, open these packs, you know, without opening the pack for real. So I hope this is actually correct, and they're going back to the regular booster pack wrapping, because that's just me personally.
I mean, they definitely have booster pack wrapping there.
Yeah,
so.
I would assume so, but you never know with Wizards. It might just be a placeholder or something like that.
That'd be a really weird placeholder since it's a picture of the actual art. But
that is very true, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why they're going back to it. I find it weird that the box is damaging the cards more than, you know, the crimping on the wrapping.
It was more just the fact that there was enough wiggle room in the packs that if they bounced around enough, it really would damage the edges of cards. Like, I was seeing a lot of pictures of people just having to mail their cards back to Wizards and saying, hey, my rare is all busted up because you put it in this packaging that is able to bounce around in and therefore get damaged. So I think this is a really smart idea on their part.
But I mean, it sounds like it's the right answer. I liked the packaging, but I didn't play enough Modern Masters 2015 to know these issues, and I thought the packages were easier to open, but that's a personal thing.
I thought they were really cool, and I think that it's a neat thing to do as far as packaging goes. I just don't know if I'd have done it on a set that's hold that, you know, you can pull $200 Tarmogoyfs out of.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion on that.
I mean, if it has the potential of damaging cards, the answer is, like, no packs should be in it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was unaware of that.
Yeah. I mean, it was a relatively small sample size compared to what the actual distribution was, but it certainly was an issue. So, this is cool. From kind of what I've read online so far and heard people talking about, we're thinking that with the revelation of Stoic Angel being in the set, we might be getting a mythic from each shard, which would be really neat. I know that they didn't do...
Well, Stoic was not a mythic. Stoic was...
It was a rare, right.
Yes.
But they could bump her up to mythic. Or maybe we're going to get like a rare from each shard, kind of have a multicolor theme going throughout this set.
And that's possible.
Yeah.
But... I would not expect her to be bumped up to a mythic. She does powerful things, but not that powerful. I'm actually, like, once we saw the art of her, I'd kind of forgotten she existed until I saw the art and was like, wait a minute, that's Stoic Angel. And then everyone's like, that's Elsa from, like, so I have to look up the card to, you know, prove everyone wrong.
Yeah.
And then I read this effect and I'm like, do I like this in modern sideboards?
God. So if you're not in the know, Stoic Angel is a 1BG 3/4 flying angel with vigilance that reads players cannot untap more than one creature during their untap step. So it's kind of like a stasis effect. That's pretty sweet if you ask me.
Yeah.
So this might be the theme that we're going to see in Modern Masters 2017. We might be seeing some shard-colored creatures, which would be pretty sweet. I'm not crazy about the selection of Domri Rod as one of the Planeswalkers, because typically these sets have two. So if it's... And last year we got Tezzeret and Karn. Obviously, Tezzeret, it's not worth as much as Karn is, but if it's Domri Rod and Liliana, I'll be happy.
If it's Domri Rod and Liliana. Yeah, there's no way.
They might put Liliana in Eternal Masters too, because she sees equal amount of play in that format as well. I'm just saying.
Wizards pretends that they don't care about the secondary market. However, they're well aware of the fact that, they don't reprint Planeswalker copies into other sets. Maybe they did it in core sets, but they definitely don't do it in story sets.
Yeah, we haven't had a reprint Planeswalker since M14, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong on that. Don't quote me on that, obviously.
But
yeah, I see your point, yeah.
So, like, they know that we need more copies of this card in Modern.
Yes.
So while they don't acknowledge the secondary market, they don't acknowledge that the card's too dang expensive officially, they note that we don't have enough copies, which is basically saying the same thing as it costs too much.
Yeah.
But
it's going to get reprinted. I would, and if it doesn't, there'll be rioting in the street. If it's not actually Snapcaster Mage, more riots in the street.
As big of a deal as they made about the fact that they're including Innistrad in this Modern Masters 2017, Liliana and Snapcaster, I can almost guarantee, will be in this set.
Yeah, I would put real actual American dollars down on that bet. So, yeah. But we will see, because this launches, like I said, in March. I'm trying to find the exact date for it. Whenever it comes out, it comes out. So, but spoiler season for this starts next week. So I hope that they do a good job of revealing, you know, the cards at a steady pace, unlike what they did for Eternal Masters, and just kind of blew the load from day one and ended up on Sphinx of the Steel one for the last mythic to be revealed. I hope we do get to see, like, Snapcaster day one, Liliana on the last day possible, and just, you know, book into the whole thing and go, look how sweet this set's going to be. We'll see. So, that is Modern Masters 2017. Sooner than that, though, well, no, late after that, actually. We do that, and then we'll do this, because if this came first, I'd be a little irritated. So I should preface by saying this all got announced at, like, the Hasbro Toy Fair or whatever it was, some big convention over the weekend. But we've got Amonkhet art to talk about.
Super the set cool. Looks sweet.
It's funny how hyped we get about art and all the baseless speculation that we start, you know, posturing about with just some pictures. But I don't care.
Also, Magic has done a very good job of communicating what cards do through their art. So you can look at...
very true.
Yeah, I mean, like, you look at a Lightning Bolt picture and you're like, this does damage to something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you now, I mean, there's certain cards you can't. Like, I mean, a Tarmogoyf, it's just like this weird big monster. I mean, I guess it is a weird big monster, but, you know, like, there's no indication of a graveyard effect with it on the art.
I see what you're saying, though, yeah.
But for the most part, you know, we can discern things.
Yeah. So here we have the five boosters. It is interesting, and this is worth noting simply because of the conspiracy behind this. A couple couple months ago, actually, there was a Reddit post that somebody had taken some kind of consumer survey, and on it, there was a question regarding Magic packaging that had art for Amonkhet, Hour of Devastation, Atlazan, which is like this Mayan-themed mermaid set, and then I forget the name of the other set following that. This is the exact art from that consumer survey. So we're 1-for-3 already, which makes me think that the art we saw in that, and if I had it to pull up, I would definitely pull it up here, thinks that we have seen the future sets for Magic. That's all I'm going to say
about it. Which would be pretty
sweet. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I know that Atlazan set, you know, had like Gorgons, like I think Vraska was part of the art, but it looked very, very cool, very Mayan inspired.
The Hour of Devastation one, or the one after that?
The one after, yeah. So it's okay. Hour of Devastation, and then this Atlazan, and I think Conquest for Power is the set that follows that, which is the worst name ever, but whatever. Mm. So it's like place and then thing that happens in place.
So I will say, in regards to the, Vraska you mentioned, mm-hmm. In the story, if you've been following it, before they go to... before they went to Kaladesh, there was a report that Vraska had been showing back up again in Ravnica.
Yes.
And Jace investigated that before coming to Kaladesh.
Yeah.
So I'm sure after Aether Revolt, we'll probably get just a little bit more of a peek at, you know, what Vraska's doing. And then after Amonkhet will be like the culmination of what Vraska's doing. And they're going to go to wherever.
Yes.
So she's coming back. It's definitely a thing, whether it's in the set after Hour of Devastation or not. I don't know. But she is in the story right now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, she's a very cool character. She's this Gorgon assassin, I think is what she was classified as. Or Golgari Gorgon Assassin. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so here we have the Amonkhet packaging. From what I understand, this little this lady here on the fourth packaging, that's a planeswalker, apparently, from what I've read. And there's been some.
Which one?
The one on the fourth pack from the left between.
Oh, the lady that looks like Cleopatra or whatever.
Yeah, apparently that's a planeswalker of some sort. So I don't know how to confirm that, but I've read that. So that's kind of neat that we're getting to introduce a brand new planeswalker. Of course, Amonkhet is the artificial plane that was created by Nicol Bolas. It's his own.
I actually looked into that, and there's nothing that I've seen that says that it's an artificial plane. It says it's the plane that he is, like, taken over and he rules.
Oh.
So I think after he gave up trying to conquer Demeria because he... you know, was trying to take over Demeria for the longest time, he eventually found this plane and was like, this is mine now.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So, yeah.
I've heard it explained both ways. I'm sure that once we get closer to the actual release, we'll find out the actual story behind it. But case in point, this is Nicol Bolas' place.
Yes.
He runs this place, and he runs it good.
He is king and god here.
Yes.
Presumably.
Yes.
Presumably god here. Definitely king.
Yeah. So let's scroll up a little bit here. So we have the bundle for Amonkhet. Super neat, if you're into those kind of things. We also have some Planeswalker decks that got spoiled at the convention. Here we have Liliana and Gideon. Here is the actual art for them revealed. There was a slip-up at, I believe it was the Portuguese translations, got the art, the names, and the first abilities of these actually leaked out. So I could not find them before we started. So you'll have to kind of, you know, forgive me if I'm wrong on this. So Gideon is a 4 and a white, and it's like Gideon Master Commander or something like that. I don't know.
Well, that has to be a fake then, because the intro decks are always 6-mana planeswalkers.
They could be, except the Liliana was confirmed.
the Liliana was confirmed?
You know, the translation, they were able to basically enhance image to the point where they could actually see it. So, and that could be the case that they are six mana always. That could be a trend that they're maybe bucking. I don't know.
Maybe. So I know, like, when it was announced, they said that's what they were doing.
Right. So this could all be just, you know, speculation and just, you know, some clever photoshopping. Now, Liliana is Death's Manipulator, I believe is what her retranslates as. And she is 5 and 2 black. So a 7 converted mana cost Planeswalker, which is absolutely huge in terms of casting cost. Her first ability was actually translated that it allows her to +1 loyalty and put up to 1/-1/-1 counter on target creature. So I don't know if that's an indication that we're going back to like Wither or Infect or Persist, perhaps. Persist would make a lot of sense, you know, if we have like zombies or like or mummies running around that can come back from the graveyard, or that Undying mechanic from Innistrad, original Innistrad block. Now, all of this is, you know, what the internet has translated, so this could be all completely wrong, but I do know these look super cool.
Agreed.
Yeah. Now, moving on, we've got Full Art Lands. Man, okay. These are hot. So, when these were first announced, these were announced as the promotional item that they were giving away at this Magic open house thing that you go and play and you get these lands. That was great. They're also being given away in booster packs, randomly 1 in every 4 booster packs. And these are super sick. If you can get these foiled, they're going to be $1 bazillion.
Yeah, I'm already planning on getting some.
Do you have a favorite out of these so far?
They're all really good.
Yeah.
I really liked the island.
Yes, like, kind of the island.
Oh my gosh. The mountain too. But I mean, I'm always a sucker for a good mountain and an island. So
yeah, it is kind of funny what was pointed out on one of the Reddit forums I was reading today, that the island, the plains, the mountain, and the forest aren't actually a plains, a mountain, an island, or a forest. It's just red colored landscapes.
Yeah, it's definitely true. Well, at least the forest has plants on it.
Yeah, like vertical hanging gardens esque, but. I just like want to point out
how massive these horns are. I'm assuming that these horns just aren't all over the freaking plane. Like, I think this is just one pair of horns that we're happy to see, and it's just so big.
Right. So I read something about this, and apparently this has been confirmed by Wizards. This is, you know, this is in the storyline somewhere. So if you notice that the sun is in the same, relatively the same place on all the art.
Well, there's two suns on the plane.
Are there two suns?
Yeah, look. There's one hidden behind the...
Are there?
Yeah. Where? Look at the planes real quick. There's one sun behind the horn. And then one... Yeah.
Interesting. Well, anyway. So the idea is that the influence of Nicol Bolas on this plane makes denizens of it, no matter where they look, see his sign in the distance. His presence is so omnipresent that you see him everywhere you look in the distance. I think that is super, super cool.
My hope was, like, he was actually just chilling out underground and his horns were sticking up. Like... And just, like, you know, the Gatewatch shows up and they're like, okay, so there's this plane. I guess we'll, you know, figure out what's going on. And then, like, suddenly Hour of Devastation comes. And just, like, these horns start shaking. Oh.
What kind of reception do you think he gets on those horns?
I think he gets all the channels.
All the channels in clear 8K definition?
Yes. No, I don't actually think those are his horns, like, doing that. But no, it would be not. It would be hilarious. Right.
So... Yeah, those are super sweet lands. We also have some key art that got released. We have our first look at Gideon, as I imagine this is going to be either card art or you know, just key storyline art. But he's a baller. You know,
I don't know. This screams card art. I could be wrong.
Yeah, but I could definitely see it. But like he looks awesome in this art. Like
he does. I really like that they updated his. They've been doing this where they're updating their clothing to the plane that they get in. Well, yes. Not everyone, but like, because Liliana's always going to be in a purple dress. Like, yeah. That's never going to happen, you know,
But the design elements of it are changing.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, Gideon just looks awesome. I've noticed that they've made it to where they ensure that the Gatewatch will always be in standard. So when Amonkhet comes out, if I remember correctly, with the rotation schedule, BFZ will be coming out, so there will be no more ally of Zendikar. So there has to be a Gideon to replace him.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that.
So, and Gideon's also the only one that will be rotating out. So, other planeswalker slots are freed up. But we already have Anissa from Kaladesh.
Right, but she's the planeswalker one, like an official release one, I think, is what they're going for.
Yes. So we have the Anissa.
Oh, Vital Force. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we will have, I'm not counting the intradecks, because while they are in standard, I'm talking about in booster packs.
Yeah.
So, with Gideon being the only one that's rotating out, I would put money down on Gideon being reprinted in this set.
Yeah.
With the art on Lily, I'm not convinced, like, that doesn't look like a, like, it looks like really good art, but this looks like a spell art, or something. I don't think that will be a planeswalker.
No. So what's really cool about this art, though, is that Wizards released the full version of this, mm-hmm. and what you don't see in the rest in this version of it, there are mummies that are bowing down and, like, holding her fruit bowl and all that. So I don't
waving
know.
Waving her fan.
Yeah, waving her fan and all that. So Liliana has gone to Amonkhet and has gotten herself a zombie army. A mummy zombie army, which is super sick.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about it.
Yeah, I hope that, because obviously she's kind of been the antagonist of the Gatewatch as of late. You know, she spurred Shauna to go back to Kaladesh and find her parents and all that. She's kind of been the manipulator in the background. So I wouldn't be surprised if we had some sort of betrayal here where she, you know, takes over some kind of power on Amonkhet, but speculation, of course.
You haven't been reading this story.
No, I'm not.
So once she found out that Tezzeret was involved in this plane, she did something that you wouldn't expect from Liliana. She got scared.
Oh, because her and Tezzeret have beef.
Yeah, her and Tezzeret have beef. She's also terrified of Nicol Bolas. And also, Amonkhet is where her third demon is.
Right.
So, like, she didn't want to go to this plane yet.
Yeah.
She was not ready.
She looks pretty content, though, to me.
She does. So I'm thinking this is later on in the story when she's more confident. She also has a very good way of, you know, presenting a false bravado. In the story, like, Jace probably knows that she's scared, but, like, she isn't presenting fear to the other planeswalkers outside of expressing Tezzeret needs to die. Tezzeret needs to die. He needs to be put down. He's dangerous, not only to this plane, to the multiverse, etc.
Yeah.
And
Agent of Bolas, though, he can never die. He's just going to rebuild him over and over and over.
Like the Daft Punk song? Better, faster, strong.
God. Moving on, we also have some new key art of our girl Nissa, and she's looking pretty awesome here.
Yeah, people were saying that she just looks, like, super happy. I think she just looks confident in this art. Like, she just doesn't look like, I am an elf, I am a robot, I don't know if I can do things. Like, well, she just looks like she's, like, finally gained some confidence, which, like, you know, and, like, if you follow the story, in Kaladesh and Aether Revolt, through her conversations with Chandra, Gideon, and the Yesenia, the black Aetherborn...
The vampire,
The vampire, whatever. Like, through those conversations, she started... her perspective on the world and her confidence in herself have changed.
Yeah.
And I think this art represents that. I don't think this art shows, I'm happy, Nyssa. Like, everyone keeps talking about it. It's just like...
Yeah, it shows her powerful and control. I mean, she showed us just how powerful she was back on Zendikar when she, you know, held the Titans down with the ley lines. When she went to Kaladesh, you know, she didn't go there to, you know, fight anybody. She went there to stand with Chandra as with her friend.
Yeah.
So I definitely agree. I think this is a new side of Nyssa. We've seen her as the vital force. We've seen her as the voice of Zendikar. We see, you know, she's obviously becoming much more. She's realizing how powerful she is and that she's not afraid to use her power, I guess. So I think you're absolutely right on that analysis there. So that's spot on.
Another thing I'll say with this card art here, I would not be surprised if we get a new Nyssa in this set. This, which I think would be excessive, but this art looks planeswalkery.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do like how, you know, we look at the Liliana and the Gideon arts, and they look very sort of like oil painted, you know, very precise in the detailing. The Nyssa art is a little bit more
watercolor.
Not so much watercolor, but almost like pastel. Like,
no, that's fair.
You can see like where the individual strokes were made in some of the detailing. Somebody did like with colored pencil almost. So I know, you know, we're not an art podcast, but I do appreciate that there, you know, is some very unique styles of art within the game. Going back to those five full art lands, if you had to guess, would you say that's one artist?
Yeah, it's not really.
That's five different artists.
Well, they've done a very good job of, you know, matching style.
Yeah, that was something that blew me away when that was pointed out, and I was like, "That's insane! That is incredible."
So, I might retract my statement about not being surprised if this is, you know, art for Nyssa Planeswalker, just because everything else looks, you know, like that oil pastel type that you were just talking about, whereas this stands out as a completely different medium.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree, because every plane, every set has had a very unique aesthetic art-wise. The one that jumps to mind is Return to Ravnica, and there was the weird horse thingy that looked unlike anything in the set, but yeah, that's neither here nor there. But anyway, I just the art in this set so far has just been fantastic, and that is only more exemplified in the five what we're assuming are the five god arts that have been revealed. So we'll go through
this. This has to be them.
It has to be. So we have the first one pulled up here, and this is our cat lady, probably the white god, if I had to guess.
Really?
Yeah. I said it's pretty white.
I mean, like...
I mean, she's wearing white.
I mean, she is wearing white. But if you scroll down to the, like, crane or vulture-looking one, like, you know, with the sun shining on him, with the angelic wings,
and
the white robes.
Usually flyers are in blue. I mean, I don't know. This is all based on speculation here, obviously. We don't know, so we'll go through these one at a time. And on speculation alone, simply because Nicol Bolas is a three-color card, you know, he's a Grixis-colored planeswalker, I have kind of postulated that these gods are actually three colors. So I've been trying to kind of figure out which combination of colors they actually are. I could be completely off here, though. So, you know, don't buy you know, with a grain of salt, obviously. So if this was, like, the white god, for instance, like the cat here, I might guess this might be the Naya god.
Yeah. Okay, I can see that, because, like, she looks like a hunter, which makes me think of more of, like, she doesn't look like a green card, but at the same time, she looks like a green card.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when I was trying to identify them by monocolor, I definitely, you know, realized that none of, like, I went by looking at the lore of the Egyptian gods, and, you know, trying to figure it out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Bast or Beset, depending on the translation, is the cat lady.
Yep.
and she's known to protect pregnant women and children, involved in celebrations, and the protector of Ra, his third eye.
I can guarantee there'll be no pregnant mechanics.
I'm sure they will not mention that first part. But even, you know, it was like, so that one just like came up with nothing.
Yeah.
So I went to the art and I was thinking like there's some greenish elements, there's some whitish elements. I didn't necessarily see red, but there definitely wasn't blue or black.
Yeah.
So I can see how you came up with Naya.
Yeah.
And that kind of
gives me, so if these are shard colored gods, and this is, you know, this is all kind of really expected, like my theory about this being a plane that Nicol Bolas created. And I originally thought this wasn't true because the shards of Alara, you know, Jund, Grixis, Bant, Esper, and Naya are all very well defined in their features. That kind of gave me pause because I thought, oh, well, you know, we can't have an Esper shard here because there's no like Aetherium or artifact creatures or anything like that. But then I remembered, oh, Nicol Bolas is from, he identifies with Grixis mana, and that made me kind of think, well, maybe he created this plane in that image. So that kind of makes me think, but I could obviously go both ways. But let's move on to the next art we have.
I will say that I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not saying they're going to do it, but I would not be surprised if there are 10 gods total and we'll see another 5 in Hour of Devastation. I'm not saying, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see any the other.
Sure, yeah.
But like, you know, this could very easily be a Celestia.
I can see that.
God.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, we'll see. It's really hard to tell with just the art here.
Yeah, obviously.
But the lore of these gods will be interesting to find out and to see how closely they match the Egyptian gods.
Yeah, yeah. So the next one we have here, this is this big bird thing. This is either the blue god, I'm assuming it's the blue god, or this very could be our Esper. The metallic wings and the metallic elements of its costume and its, you know, the armor and whatnot kind of look very Aetherium-esque, very, you know, obviously metallic-based.
I think more Bant.
I could also see this. Yeah, probably also Bant, yeah. Yeah, I could definitely see that go that way as well, yeah.
Yeah, once again, this is kind of drawn from a little bit of the art and a little bit of the lore. This one was a little easier than Cat Lady. So Nekbet was depicted as a vulture most often, which it kind of looks like a crane, kind of looks like a vulture. It's hard to tell. Was the protector of a city, but eventually grew to be the protector of Upper Egypt, protector of childbirth, which I don't think we're going to talk about childbirth, and protector of the pharaohs, most interestingly.
Sure.
And this character does look like a guardian.
Yeah.
This character, you know, looks like he's ready to protect some stuff. He doesn't look like he's about to go to war. He looks like he's defending something.
I don't want to tangle with this guy, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't want to tangle
with
him.
Big spear.
Yeah. But, you know, he doesn't have, like, an aggressive stance or anything like that.
Yeah,
so that takes away red and black in my mind, which leaves, you know, Bant.
Okay, yeah, I can see that, yeah. So we go to our next.
I would be curious to hear why you think Esper, though.
It's more just like that. The Esper shard was a lot of flyers, like Esper Coronauts comes to mind. The metallic armor kind of makes me think of the way that they looked on Esper. It's a bird. A lot of the Esper creatures were flyers. Obviously, there's a little bit of black in the art. So I don't know. The black portion of Esper was never really all that well pronounced, if I don't remember correctly. So that's just kind of how I think. But I could easily see this being a Bant creature as well. So
yeah,
and the only reason I say it's Bant is because some of the rest of these, the last three make this really hard if any of this is correct. So we can roll on to our crocodile god.
Sobek.
Yeah. I have no, like, this is maybe Jund? I don't know, or this is the red one?
Sobek is a crocodile. And it's just hard for me to see a crocodile in anything other than blue or green.
Right.
So, like, if it's blue, I mean, he's also the boatman, and he even looks like he's actually holding...
paddle of some sort.
Yeah, like he's holding his staff in a way that could be interpreted as paddling.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking he has to have some blue in his identity.
Okay, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. Like I said, these last three make things really difficult because it throws all of my theory out the window. Yep.
He's also the protector of the Nile in Egyptian mythology.
Yeah, so maybe Grixis?
Possibly.
I don't know.
But also, I could totally see this guy like boating Nicol Bolas around. Like Nicol Bolas is like sitting in the boat, like, and then you've got Sobek here,
just paddling along. I already called it in our chat yesterday. We have a legendary like sunboat vehicle that you can like crew up here. All right, our next one we've got Anubis,
Lady Anubis.
Yeah, it is a woman actually because she's got
Very clearly there.
Cleavage. I can see this being Grixis. I can see this being Jund. I think
Esper.
That, now we're talking. Okay, I can see Esper here too. That's
because
interesting.
Because, white and black, that's both aspects of, the life and death cycle.
Sure,
and then,
sure.
Blue because reasons. the main thing is like the white and the black is what I see the most here. And then blue, I mean, to have more control over the life and death cycle or something. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of spinning here. There is the I know in Greek mythology, like the way you got to, after you died, you went down a river.
Mm-hmm. River Styx, yep.
I don't know if there's an equivalent to that in Egyptian mythology or not.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know that you had to pay Charon, the ferryman, otherwise he
Well, that was Greek.
That's what I'm saying. In Greek mythology, you go to River Styx and you pay Charon, the riverman. You give him some money and he weighs it against your soul. And if you are found to be lighter than your soul or the money is heavier than your soul or something like that, you get to go across and go to the afterlife or whatever. I could see Esper on this guy. I could see Grixis. I can see Jund on this guy. Like I said, these last two make it very difficult and I have no idea.
I think the last one is Jund.
I could see that too. So we got our snake, but he's a snake. I can see this.
Which snakes
green.
Are always green.
Right. I can see this being I can see it being Grixis as well. I wanted to say it was Sultai though. But then I realized this is not a wedge
but
set.
What's interesting about them choosing the snake is that like this is the antagonist in Egyptian mythology, the god of chaos and war and stuff like that. All so, right. So my thought for red because war. He's a snake. Snakes in magic are historically green. He also has green eyes.
He does have green eyes,
So it's like I put those two colors in place, and then white just didn't fit the mythology of the card. And since all of the gods like arguably have sun shining on them, I discounted the sun shining on this and was left with black more of because there wasn't another choice. But Jund does seem to fit the whole like chaos and war antagonist type mentality of snake god.
Yeah.
So it is interesting like looking at these and like thinking and theorizing on what they could be. I would expect him to be either a red black god if we're doing dual color.
Sure. The whole issue is, this is all based on speculation, obviously. We've had this art for 2 days, effectively.
We're talking at our butt.
Yeah, we're filling time now. But it's cool to think about these things. It's my hope, at least, that they are not functional like the Theros gods are functional. I hope this is not a devotion mechanic. I hope this is something brand new. Because as cool as devotion was, it homogenized the metagame a little too quickly, I think. And I hope we don't have another situation where we have like just mono black or mono red or whatever it's going to be. But it's super sick.
I think a devotion mechanic would be fine if it was like, let's say these are three color planeswalkers, like we just, you know, like we just theorized they would be.
Right.
Well, if you had a devotion mechanic with three colored gods like that, the devotion mechanic on the dual colored gods was significantly higher.
It was seven
instead of five.
Yeah.
So if they can keep the gods closer in line, because there were in Theros, one of the big problems was there were gods that were just clearly better than other gods.
Yes.
So if we can keep the gods in line of similar power level, and have a devotion mechanic with, you know, three colors, or even if it was dual colored, it will be strong enough to where we don't have to worry about that. However, much as they make a big deal about the trials of the gods, I think to activate them or to do things with them, you'll have to complete some sort of like sub game to get them operating at maximum efficiency, or however you want to describe that. Because to earn the favor of the gods, the people have to complete trials. Yeah. I think it'll be something similar to the ordeal enchantments that were in Theros.
Okay. Here's a requirement on this cat god thing. Mm-hmm. Do this thing, you know, make
like
soldier
the
tokens.
The quests
put
would be
three creatures into play. You know, beginning of your upkeep, if you have three creatures into play, this permanent is now a creature in addition to its other types, or something like that. Yeah, I can see, like devotion to something other than mana color. I guess is kind of what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like,
yeah,
draw X cards in a turn, and the blue one turns on, or something like that. But that's actually very interesting to do it as your devotion to a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that.
Though, like I said, it would be fine with doing, if these are three-colored gods, having the devotion, or even if they are monocolored, just having the devotion be high enough to where, like, maybe the gods only see play as, like, their initial effect instead of as an actual realistic finisher.
Right, and we do have to remember when devotion was such a powerful mechanic, the only reason that, you know, like Thassa and Erebos, and the reason those decks worked was because of they had printed cards in RTR block that made them so stupidly powerful. They printed Nightdale Spectre. They printed Frostburn Weird that made these cards turn on as soon as you played them. And we haven't had anything like that recently. So I think that alone puts these things in check. So whatever they do with them, unless we're just overlooking something very obvious, I think that whatever they do with these gods, it will be very, very unique, but at the same time, I think very, very manageable in terms of gameplay and what they're actually going to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think these are going to be like mini planeswalkers in terms of the fact that they are going to warp the game when they enter.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look at Thassa. Like, Thassa comes down and took the game over by herself.
Mm-hmm.
Which she kills on the next turn.
I just love, like, everyone told me how bad she was, and I was like, nah, this is the best one. And you're just like, no. And like, the one you want to play is, I forget what everyone was on. I think everyone was on Erebos or something.
And but Erebos initially was good after a while, just because of the card draw ability on it was so fantastic. And, you know, loss of life was no big deal in that deck because you had Grey Merchant. But yeah, like all of them at some point or another did play a relatively niche role in the format. You know, obviously the two-colored gods didn't really do anything other than like Keranos did in Modern. But you know, that's just because devotion, like those cards were just, the effects weren't all that unique. You know, I remember, like, Athreos was supposed to be, like, the end-all, be-all for black-white mid-range decks, but, you know, whatever. But, yeah, so that I think that wraps it up for tonight. You know, we've got lots of cool stuff to talk about. Next week, we have our first week of Modern Masters spoilers. I think that just, you know, those initial spoilers are going to give us probably a pretty good idea of the rest of the content of the set. The set does come out in, I think, the 17th of March, if I'm not mistaken. So very, very soon, actually. So we'll get through that spoiler season very, very quickly, maybe 1 or 2 weeks, maybe 3 at max. So we're looking forward to that. We might do a full set review for that one. I don't know. Scheduling might be difficult, but I think it'd be fun to do another full set review of that set because it is going to be a relatively unique experience for people drafting that, and I think it would be a benefit for people to be able to hear from us and say, what we think about the set as a whole.
Yeah, I would agree with the Modern Masters 17. I think it deserves a full set review.
Yeah.
I believe, from what I'm hearing, it's supposed to be a longer print run than Eternal Masters was.
Right.
Which, that's a rumor. Don't turn off this podcast and be like, you know, all these cards are going to drop in price because this set's going to be around forever. And it's like,
yeah.
But people are talking, people are saying that this is going to be a longer print run for some reason. I don't know where they got that idea from, but...
Wizards knows the market, I think, at this point. They've done this 3 times now with Master sets. I think they know that there can be a higher number, a higher print run, and it not affect the overall results, you know, the market too much. So I think, I would believe that.
Well, they don't acknowledge the market. It doesn't matter what impact it has.
Right, but you know what I'm saying here.
Their concern is whether or not they can keep selling packs.
Oh, I think they will. As long as
they will,
yeah,
and they know they can now because Eternal Masters got a second print run.
It didn't. Did you not hear about this? The second print run was not a second print run. It was the continuation of the first print run.
Oh, so they just never stopped printing.
Well, they printed the first print run and then cut it off and said that's it. And that second print run that came out around Christmas time was the remainder of that print run. It was a complete farce.
So they printed more than they actually said they did.
Yes.
That's really dumb.
No, well, if it would have worked, and they would have looked like heroes, you know, come Christmas time, like, hey guys, there's a little bit of Eternal Masters left. We'll send it out to a couple stores, and everybody's gonna be happy. Then it got leaked out that it actually was the continuation of the first print run. And they just stored it for a while. Like, it didn't matter. I mean, it didn't make that much of a difference. But there were a number of YouTube videos that were confirming that rumor as truth. So I'm inclined to believe that as well. So,
well, either way, like, we did see a lot more Eternal Masters than we ever saw of either Modern Masters.
That's true, yeah.
And also, Eternal Masters was a fantastic draft format. Yes. It was a fantastic sealed format.
Yeah, it was.
I think I actually did like the sealed format more than I liked the draft.
I would disagree with that, but I can see why. I can see both sides to it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Just the decks that I saw come out of sealed were always very interesting and still did powerful things. Like, I never saw anyone in that just, like, walk away with a deck. And when I'm drafting with good players, I love drafting. But you get, like, one person that doesn't know what they're doing in a draft, and it messes it up for everybody. So,
to an extent, sure, yeah.
Yeah. So, and admittedly, sometimes, rarely, on occasion, I am that player that messes it up for everyone because I misread the draft. But at least I'm not, like, the guy that's just like, oh, well, I'll take this card. And then on next turn, you know, next pack, completely different color, I'll take this card, pass it. You know, now we're in our third color now, pass again.
You can play 3 colors in Eternal Masters, though. I mean, it's...
Well, there were people that were playing 5-color decks because they didn't know how to draft.
That was a thing, though. There was the 5-color Honden deck.
They weren't playing the Hondens, though.
Well... That's the Rome. I mean,
yeah, no, no, it's just
to put it in perspective, though. I know what you're talking about. I participated in a 10-person Aether Revolt draft on Sunday.
Oh god!
And I was within two seats of two people who did not know how to draft.
Yeah,
my deck was insane because when you add two packs to the draft, that's more cards for Alex to pick and evaluate. Mm-hmm. I had a sick blue-black control deck. That's neither here nor there, though. But yeah, I do agree with you. If the print run is longer, which I do believe it will be, if it's as good as Eternal Masters was and they learned the lesson of Eternal Masters or Modern mm-hmm. Masters 2015 and how poor that was in relation to Modern Masters 2013, I think they have done this enough times. They have learned the lessons to make Modern mm-hmm. Masters 2017 probably, maybe, the best one so far. Maybe. Don't, yeah. Cross all the fingers and all the toes and all the hairs and all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe. Don't quote me on that. Don't come pitchforking and burning torches at my door when it's not.
But it has the potential.
There's always potential for every set to be the best yeah. set ever. You know, and Magic's, you know, constant year-over-year growth is a clear indication of sets being mm-hmm. the best set ever. But it's whatever.
Apparently, Hasbro reported that Magic has grown for the fifth year in a row.
Yes, yeah, it is experience the. I don't have the link to it, unfortunately, but there was a their press conference. Essentially, they talked mm-hmm. about Magic Digital Next, how Magic's been doing. But yeah, mm-hmm. there has not been a year of non-growth for Magic in the past 5 years, which is insane.
Which is fantastic. I mean,
yeah. Great for
us. Yeah, if Magic keeps getting bigger, we get more tournaments. If we get more tournaments, hopefully that means more local tournaments, or more local big tournaments.
Unless you live in the boonies like I do.
This guy yeah. moved to Florida.
Yeah, that may or may not have been a mistake. Whatever. Anyway, I think that about wraps it up for tonight, though. I want to say big thanks to Justin for joining us tonight. Sean and Steven, they are prepping for the RPTQ this weekend, so good luck to those guys over there. Check us out over on Facebook. Look for the EOT Newsflash, also on Twitter at EOT Newsflash, on Facebook or on YouTube at EOT Newsflash. You can find all current episodes of the podcast in their video form up there, as well as some past videos of Steven and I drafting and doing fun stuff on there. But we're going to do it next week, and I think we're going to do it again.
Woohoo!
And again. So, big thanks to Justin again. Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening tonight, guys. We'll see y'all next week.